What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, free to tweet its thoughts on whatever, whenever. Today, Watford, where the wilder things are for now. Manning's the man in at Oxford. We'll look ahead to a stacked midweek, Fergie fumes at pathetic posh performance, and plenty more besides. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we are back with you for another week. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I've got Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin with me. Clarky, how quickly would you refuse to pod with me if Quinbet asked me to step down because of my controversial views on cheese and onion still being included in the Walker's multi-pack? I know Sam's got strong feelings on this.
Well, I'd show solidarity with you. Of course I would. But I'd probably urge you to get your taste buds checked out, because for me, a cheese and onion has to be a staple of the multi-pack. I don't see what your issue is with it. Yeah, I can't agree with you, but I would show solidarity.
All right, I don't want to get bogged down in that again, but that was a weird match of the day, Sam, wasn't it? Let's just be pleased that we're not going to see that again.
Yeah, I watched it by chance Sunday morning, actually. It was on in the background when the usual commotion, carnage was taking place around it. So I don't normally ever get an opportunity to sit down and watch it in his normal format. So it was odd. And I wanted a little bit more for 20 minutes for my money. Cheese and onion and a pint of shandy, lager top, straight lager after a game of golf in 30 degree heat. Clarkie's been privy to this when I came to his his golf day and came third. I just dropped it in there. Amongst about 200 geezers in matching polo shirts. It's one of my favourite things in the world, cheese and onion with a lager. So it's terrible. Shout out for
Matt,
me.
You need help.
All right. I mean, they're cloying, but let's not get into that. Let's tell you about the offer that our friends at Quinbet have got. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, we're going to get to some news. So this is a little old by now, but not since we last met. Chris Wilder in at Watford on a deal to the end of the season. Adrian, I knew Chris Wilder was going somewhere soon because he was on just about every football broadcast that there was for a couple of weeks, which is always a sign that a manager's keen to get back in work. Is this the right one for him and vice versa?
Well, if it doesn't go well and he loses his job, I don't think it'll be a slight on his career, because it's par for the course at Watford. I think it's a good appointment for them. I really do. It's a team that look like they need a bit of direction. They need a little bit of organisation and maybe a clearer identity. And that's what Chris Wilder does. One of the reasons I really like him as a manager is that he marries old-fashioned values, hard work, organisation, grit and fight, with some modern tactical ideas. The underlapping fullbacks is underlapping centre-backs is one example. But I think in general, he's quite sophisticated in some of the patterns of play that his teams develop. So I rate him, in short. And I think it's a decent pickup by Watford. And it gives him a chance to just remind everyone what a decent manager he is. His win ratio is excellent wherever he's been. Even at Borough, it wasn't bad. It was just more of a case of the club's way of operating through a director of football just didn't suit him there. I think Watford have done well to get him.
Good for him, isn't it, Sam? Because as Adrian alludes to there, you know, the Borough thing didn't work out, and every manager can say, well, the fit wasn't right. And with Watford, if it doesn't go well, you just say, well, Watford, isn't it? Doesn't go well for most people. So it's almost a free hit for him.
I can't believe I'm going to mutter this, but if they weren't to make it this year, I could still see him being in charge next year. Just don't know why, but I think he gives you a good opportunity next year with a pre-season. With his history, with the obvious talent that they've got in that squad, especially the front players, to get them up over the course of a season. So yeah, hopefully the owner's listening to this podcast intently, and he's going to stick with the manager for longer than a year. I'm going to discuss what we saw from Watford slightly later in the yeah. podcast, but it's on the face of it, it's a good appointment. They should see a little bit more structure, a little bit more tactical nous than what they've seen under Slaven Bilic, which I don't think is his strong point. I think he's a man manager, someone I'm sure is great to play for, but I'm not sure that tactical flexibility, tactical awareness is probably his strongest point. And I think Chris Wilder will bring that.
Quick one. if Chris Wilder takes Watford up via the playoffs this summer and they try to get him to renew a new contract, would you in his shoes, or would you say, no, that's me done? I'll look for a little bit more security elsewhere. Thanks.
Bit of a gamble. I reckon he'd take it and get sacked in November, but at least he'd have had a 3-year contract and he'll get a decent payoff.
True.
At that point. What about Liam Manning at Oxford, Sam? I looked at this and thought, oh, yeah, that feels about right. I mean, he's still only 37, took MK Dons to the playoffs last season, but he got sacked by the Dons in December because they were looking like they were more likely to go down than go up. And I ignorantly thought, well, Oxford kind of not doing much this season, so he's got the rest of the season to kind of plan for next. They're only 3 points off the relegation zone. That makes this quite a risky appointment, doesn't it?
I think it's a huge risk. I understand it over a longer period. Had it been done in the summer, I'm not saying that an interim, a temporary manager would have been the answer right now. I think they needed to appoint someone, and I would have fully understood this had he been gone in the summer. Again, pre-season, I think an ideology to bring in younger players, probably from the academies, top academies. And he's clearly a good coach who's got loads of experience at various different levels in various different countries. So he deserves another opportunity, because I think there was mistakes made in the transfer windows at MK Dons, and he was left with a poor squad. That said, I think I've said on this podcast, I think they should have done better than what he produced at MK Dons this season. For someone who's not experienced in this scenario, it's a massive risk. So that's why someone like Michael Appleton, who would have had the highs and lows throughout his management career in the EFL, coming in, shaking up a dressing room, identifying exactly where they needed to shore up, where they needed to improve, would have made more sense. So I'm really surprised, because they're in desperate trouble. You know, I think they're 3 points out of it right now. But, you know, when you are on that steep downward curve, it's really hard to arrest that slide. Sorry, there's a lot of weird analogies going in there, but you know what I mean? I do find it a strange appointment. There's nothing more I can add to that. If you can keep them up next season, I'll be optimistic that they can improve a great deal. And yeah, I think they've lost their way in terms of their philosophy this year. Definitely. Oxford, I'm not really too sure what the plan's been recently. He will bring a clear possession-based style to Oxford in the long term.
He knows the league, Adrian, which is the positive. I mean, massive game for him next up, away at Morecambe, and then they've got Cheltenham. So he needs to get points from that, doesn't he? They're 2 points. They are, as Sam said, 3 points above the relegation zone. So you win away to Morecambe, it all looks a lot better. You lose that game, crikey, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I'd echo everything Sam said. He can't turn to his relegation dogfight playbook, can he? He's not been in it before. He's going to be learning on the job. And I think he's more of a philosophy coach, more of a builder. As Sam said, if they stick with him, come hell or high water, I think he will improve the culture of the club, the culture of the team, the style of play, etc. But it is a big old gamble. Just before we move on, can we just take a little moment to applaud Dean Holden for securing himself a 3-year deal at Charlton, having done okay over the period he has as interim manager. He's been linked with a number of jobs, and now he's got himself a long-term deal.
Let's applaud him and his agent. Some bits that caught our eye from the weekend's action, in the lighter side of the news, I would say. The rugby lines on Newport's Rodney Parade pitch led to Bradford keeper Harry Lewis thinking that his penalty area went out further than it actually did. He handled the ball outside of the box, and he got a booking for it. He was lucky only to get a yellow, wasn't he, Adrian?
No, it's a common sense decision. Of course it was. It's an innocent mistake. I think Newport should be, I don't know, not fined, but they should got to work harder to get rid of the rugby lines, haven't they? Got to wash them off. I don't really like to see it, if I'm honest. I know it's, you have to have it if you share with rugby, but yeah, they hadn't made much of an effort to wash those lines. So I think it's an innocent mistake. Referee, common sense decision. Well played.
Right, you asked me to put this one in the running order, and I must confess I haven't seen it. Josh Windass's taxi celebration. I thought Josh Windass wasn't doing celebrations because he's too good to be playing in League One.
opportunity to speak about his car, Clarky, wasn't it?
Yeah. Go on, remind us what his car was.
Oh, I get my Q's and my A's mixed up. I know it was a bit of BM, but one of the big ones.
Was it an X7? I think
that was it. That was it.
Yeah, it was a little passive brag, wasn't it, from him. He had to pick up some of the lads who were snowed in. Snow's not an issue because he got a massive car. But yeah, the man who doesn't celebrate comes up with this taxi celebration. And he gets it all wrong because he goes left-hand drive, doesn't he? He gets everyone in the back seat, but he's on the left-hand side. So it was a bit of a fail, really, from Josh Windass, who basically went on record. I looked this up, went on record a couple of months ago to say, it's no reason other than I don't get that excited when I score a goal. That's it. That's the reason he doesn't celebrate.
Hey, do you know what? The only way that could have been better, there was someone on the bonnet as well, by the way, wasn't there, Clarky, who come spiralling off the front of the car. You should, if it's the vehicle of such magnitude that we all expect it to be, I'm not that familiar with that one, but he should have had the two directly behind him, two behind that, and then two, maybe the smaller players, Barry Bannon, facing the other way, like the old school, you know, when he had two in the boot, facing the outside. That would have been nice, wouldn't it? I can't think of another vertically challenged Sheffield Wednesday player.
He's rushed it, hasn't he? He's rushed the celebration. Yeah.
But it was good.
Just remember, red light indicates doors are secured. Goal of the week. I mean, there's only one contender. It was Alfie May at Peterborough. Let's hear it and let's hear what Alfie had to say about it.
May tries a shot from a long way.
Sam, you absolutely love this one, right? I thought his second was pretty special too, mind you.
Yeah, because it's a little bit calamitous, the goalkeeping on the first. It almost makes the second one as good, which is bizarre. Almost the best touch out of the three is the first touch on the first goal. That is sent. If he's back to goal and he's thought, I've got a chance I could swivel here, I'm loving that. I used to sometimes think I could take it on my chest from a throw or, you know, when I'm really deep and switch the play on the volley. And that looks amazing when Harry Kane does that. He's a brilliant architect of that type of crossfield ball. But to have the strike, to get the power and the accuracy was amazing. And I mean, I didn't score a goal as good as any of his three in the last week in my career. So congratulations. I can't say much more than that. He is in ridiculous form. And the way he cut across, he means that. Again, I spoke about the intention on his strike last week. Only place it could go. Again, the technique on his second at the weekend to cut across the ball, put it top right. That's exactly where he is putting that. So amazing two goals. He's the goal of the week victor once more, isn't he? No question.
Clarke, I like the goalkeeper scrambling back. I actually think that adds something, but it's the bounce before it goes into the net, which means it just loses a couple of cool points for me.
It definitely. I mean, it just adds comedy value. It's Benny Hill goalkeeping. He's got to work on his pace, the keeper, hasn't he? I mean, he's carrying a rucksack on his back, isn't he, as he's trying to retrieve that ball? That was pretty poor. But yeah, wonderful technique. Definitely the goal of the week. Love the celebration in front of like a very sparsely populated stand, giving it large. No, it was a wonderful moment. I've got a few other contenders that are unlucky. I think Stevenage's Josh March. I mean, overhead kick. That was magnificent. Joe Powell for Burton, stuck one in the top bins. Mo Issa for MK Dons, huge goal. Brilliant technique from a free kick. So, and I also thought Andreas Weimann's goal for Bristol City was pretty tidy. But yeah, none of them can match Alfie May.
Ivan Toney, once of Peterborough, shot from the halfway line against Fulham the other day. And when it was in flight, he had a bit of a scramble, the Fulham goalkeeper. And I thought that happens so often. Maybe it is worth shooting from the halfway line more often. Don't know if it's the floodlights, but they don't half lose their bearings, do they, goalkeepers, when they're running back. And like you think of the Rooney one at West Ham, slightly different kind of trajectory, It was a bit more of a volley, wasn't it? Or it sat up, bouncing. But the goalkeeper, they just lose where they are. So maybe it's something I should have done more often.
Talking of losing bearings, what about the goal that Exeter scored at Lincoln? Where the player thinks the goalkeeper's right behind him, and there he is, stood at left back. That was one of the funniest mix-ups I've seen in a long, long, long time. So, yeah, well played, Lincoln, for that.
But it's Alfie May who gets that goal of the week. Next, we're going to do a review/preview mashup. Right, Middlesbrough are going to be looking to maintain their momentum when Stoke City visit the Riverside on Tuesday. Borough breathing down the necks of second place Sheffield United after they won and the Blades lost at the weekend. It means there's just 4 points between the teams ahead of the midweek matches. Running out of good things to say about Middlesbrough, aren't we, Adrian? I saw that West Ham were thinking about Michael Carrick as maybe a potential successor to David Moyes. I don't know why he'd want to make that switch because he looks like he might be in the Premier League next year anyway.
Yeah, Middlesbrough absolutely flying. Superb, wasn't it, to come back from a goal down against Swansea to win. To win that one, they're scoring goals for fun. Borough, aren't they? 22 across their last 8 games. Akpom, Archer, Ramsey. It's gone under the radar, really, that they've gone for the double raid to Aston Villa, haven't they, with Cameron Archer and Aaron Ramsey. I just think, is that something more clubs should do? Because you've got two young players, two gifted young players that know each other, know their games inside out, and they've got that chemistry already. I think that's potentially really, really smart recruitment from Middlesbrough, who are brilliant at home. So I think the game against Stoke in midweek is one, even though Stoke are rejuvenated, it's one that they're absolutely capable of winning. They've won 7 in a row at the Riverside, and the aggregate goals during that run of wins is 20 to Borough, 3 to the opposition. So This is going to be a really, really hard game, I think, for Alex Neil's sides, who will look to bully those talented younger players, because that's what they're doing at the moment. They're using their strength, Stoke, very, very well, and they'll try and disrupt their rhythm, because once this Borough side get into flow, they're quite a hard team to stop.
Yeah, 15 wins from 20 championship matches so far for Michael Carrick. Absolutely incredible. Stoker in the goals at the minute, Sam, 8 in 2 games. After that, 5 they scored at Sunderland. They beat Blackburn 3-2 on Friday. We spoke about Liam Manning and how he's not really setting up for next season. But Alex Neil maybe is. They're not going to go down, are they? They're miles off the playoffs. It's been a disappointing season, but they're showing a bit of life at least.
Yeah, I think it's been a great week, hasn't it, really, for them. I think just on what you just said, though, some of the stellar performers right now or some of the really important cogs are loanees. At the weekend, you saw on Friday night, you saw how they lost their way when they made a few substitutions. I think just keeping hold of what they had took off his firepower as well. But Pearson's been a really good signing from Bournemouth. Obviously, you've got Hervo, who scored the 2 goals, the fullback. Dujon Sterling struck up a really good relationship with Campbell down the left, and Smallbone has been amongst the assists and the goals in recent weeks. So, you know, that's a quartet of players that have probably inspired, if you like, these last 2 victories, along with Josh Laurent, who's got a bit more of a forward thinking role actually in this Stoke lineup, because the midfield's anchored by Pearson. So he's been getting forward, 3 goals and an assist in his last 4, something I probably didn't ordinarily think he had in his armory. And so there's that, and there's the forward players, more consistency. I spoke of that last time. I still think they probably need a centre forward and probably a goalkeeper to be a better bet next season under Alex Neil. But yeah, as Clarkey says, the task for this weekend is going to be stopping Middlesbrough scoring. Failed to score once in those 20 games that you referenced, Matt. And I think if you think of Akpom and Archer right now, I wouldn't take a front 2 from any other side in the Championship, or a number 10 and a centre forward over those 2. I'm talking Burnley, Sheffield United, anyone really. Burnley's Teller or one of the wide players and Ashley Barnes. I think those 2 right now, they've got such momentum. They're in such great form that gives Middlesbrough an unbelievable chance. So if Stoke can stop them scoring, and no one's done that since October, I think there's been 0-0 draws on a couple of occasions at the Riverside. They've got a chance, but that's a tough predicament.
Yeah, only Burnley have scored more goals in the Championship than Middlesbrough this season. And now, we mentioned that Chris Wilder is the new Watford boss for a while, at least. He'll look to get his first win when the Hornets take on Birmingham City at Vicarage Road on Tuesday. Sam, you were revelling in Watford's defeat because it came against QPR at the weekend. Wilder said, seeing it up close and personal, I've learned a lot more about the players and the shortcomings of the team and the group at the moment. What do players think when you get a manager who comes in on a short-term contract? Or is that not a thing at Watford? Because any manager who comes in, there's a sort of explicit understanding that it is effectively a short-term contract anyway.
Yeah, I think it's that, Matt, to be honest. I think that goes out the window to a degree. Just on QPR, it was nice yesterday speaking to one of my neighbours about the impact Chris Martin's had, which I didn't think was going to be a conversation I was having this season, especially as I played with Chris Martin 20 years ago or whatever it was. So still life in the old dog, it would seem. Yeah, this was Watford with a back three, I suppose. I think only maybe half a dozen times under Slaven Bilic previously this season they've been ordinarily a kind of 4-2-3-1 or something of that ilk towards the latter stages of his tenure. So saw the makings of what Chris Wilder would like to do. That said, he's lost Saar in this match. So maybe even a kind of 3-4-1-2 with the two strikers that he likes, Chris Wilder moving forward. He certainly has that as an option, maybe as one of his only options now that he's looks to have lost Saar. But one shot on target from open play in this game, and that came in the 80th minute from Gaspar. Who was playing at wing back, I believe. So needs to reignite those forward players. Keenan Davis didn't have an attempt in 90 minutes on the pitch. And I think that's where they have to improve. Only Preston scored fewer in the top half. That's 41 goals in 36 games that Watford have scored. We would not have envisaged this. And this is a typical game where Watford have slipped up this season. Their record's been really good against the top sides. But at home in 9 games against teams below 8th, they've only won twice. So this has got Neil One, Troy Deeney written all over it.
It hasn't.
Is he fit? Well, he's gonna be the brains behind this, yeah, very course, vocally, yeah. just behind the dugout, orchestrating.
At least we don't have to see a non-celebration. That's one good thing. Birmingham, Adrian, first win in 6 against Rotherham at the weekend. Puts them 10 points clear of danger. That should be enough, shouldn't it? They've been circling the drain for a few seasons, but they're not going to get flush this time around.
Yeah, I'm going to declare Birmingham City safe from relegation. I just don't think the bottom three have enough about them to claw that kind of deficit back. And I think that Birmingham will continue to chip away. And actually, I can see exactly where Sam's coming from, envisaging a scrappy, scruffy 1-0 win for Birmingham here. Wouldn't surprise me at all. It was a huge 6-pointer, wasn't it, for them against Rotherham at the weekend. Lose that and you're starting to think, okay, you know, we're looking over our shoulders again. But yeah, they showed real quality in the first half, created a lot of chances. And then when Rotherham came back into it, they showed that they can be a team and that they can sort of dig in and be resilient. And that's what happened in the game. It was a great goal. And then we saw it from Kadra. So that was a really tidy finish. It's a risk to play someone like him at a wing back. He's absolutely not a natural. I think that's the problem with Kadra. And it's kind of hard to place him. Is he like a floating front man, a number 10? Is he a winger? I don't really know what he is. In this game, he pretty much played as a left wing back. But he came up with the moment that made the breakthrough. So well done to him. Well done to John Eustace for giving him the opportunity. And also for blooding some young players. I mean, that was probably the standout feature of the win against Rotherham was the youth of the midfield. Hall was in there, Chang was in there, and young Jordan James come off the bench early to replace Bielik. So they had a really youthful engine room, and they showed that they can handle it in the Championship. On Christian Bielik, by the way, did you see he got two teeth knocked out with that challenge? I mean, is he the unluckiest player in sort of recent EFL history in terms of getting injuries and freak things happening? It just always seems to be that. But as soon as Bielik gets into a team and settles down and you think, oh, wow, what a good player he is, something like this happens. It's crazy.
Yeah, you could actually see at least one of the teeth flying out on the TV coverage of it, which was pretty revolting. So Birmingham are all right. Huddersfield, very much not. We've already condemned them to the drop on this show. Things don't get any easier for them. They're second from bottom. They lost at West Brom at the weekend, and they will entertain Norwich on Wednesday. Neil Warnock said, we've got to score goals. It's hard to see where they're coming from. That's four games in a row without now, Adrian. Mm. You never know. You beat Norwich at home. Maybe there's a little bit of belief. But you're talking about a team that have won 8 of 36 games so far.
No, they're going down, man. Yeah. I cannot see any scenario really where Huddersfield survive. They can't score goals. You look at the starting 11 as well. I mean, it is a shadow of the side that reached the playoffs last season. And what's happened at Huddersfield is an object lesson in bad recruitment, isn't it? In terms of letting really good players go. Some of it they couldn't help, of course, but trying to replace them with hopeful signings, ones that are coming from the lower leagues that could turn out good or might just have sort of overstretched themselves. And I think that's been the case for Huddersfield. A lot of their players wouldn't be stars in League One. In fact, if Huddersfield were in League One right now, I don't think they'd be near the playoffs. I think they'd be around about mid-table. That's where I'd place them. In a way, they're getting worse. Just four shots against West Brom at the weekend. They only had 30% of possession. I think the previous game against Bristol City had 34% possession, 8 shots. It's looking pretty bleak. And I think that Norwich, having lost to Sunderland on Sunday, will be looking for a quick bounce back. Obviously, Wagner going back to his old stomping ground. I think he'll be very, very eager to make sure he doesn't leave with egg on his face. So yeah, Huddersfield at home to Norwich, I don't really give them much chance.
And Wagner, Sam, has already earned some impressive away results, hasn't he? Preston, Coventry, Millwall gone there and won at all of them. They're just outside the playoffs after that home defeat by Sunderland. I wonder if they'd be better off not going up this season. Is that just a ridiculous thing to say?
Hmm. Been reading The Athletic this morning, my friend, haven't you?
Have I?
It wasn't Michael. Michael, I did read some of his stuff over the weekend. I think it was actually the local Beeb that did a little bit of a kind of question, put it out there to the audience before. Canary Call, I believe it's called.
Yes, hosted by Chris Gorham, friend of the show.
And that was... It was kind of split down the middle. The majority were saying, no, ridiculous, get back up into the Premier League rather than this. But there was a few people that could understand the sentiment. They might not be ready, but you'd still take it. They weren't ready.
Would you, though? Seriously? If I was a Norwich fan, I'd rather have another year in the Championship and build a proper team that can sort of shine at Championship level, e.g. be a top two side, so that when you go into the Premier League, you're at least better equipped. If they went up, they would be bottom again, wouldn't they?
I suppose the counter to that is look at what Fulham have done, but we're talking about a club with much more dough to make it as simplistic as possible, right? That have got the ability to go and not buy ready-made, but guys that are going to give you a better opportunity of acclimatising to the top level. I think we've seen that Norwich aren't going to do that. I don't know if the goalposts would have moved significantly enough to change their fortunes if they were to get there. I mean, I've seen Norwich fans decide that they're not going up this season, which... it is nonsense, right? 2 points off the playoffs. I wouldn't want to meet Middlesbrough, per se, in the playoffs right now, but they'd have as good a chance as any if they were to get into the playoffs. This result at the weekend was weird. They were outplayed pretty much in every department by Sunderland and didn't really look threatening until Sargent came on. They've got a habit of losing goals and losing their way in games. They could have quite easily conceded again to Gelhart. And I think the overbearing thing that I've had when I've been speaking about Norwich this year is their inability to put away the top sides to take points off the best teams in the division. So this isn't going to be problematic going to Huddersfield, but I think ultimately that's why they're not threatening the automatic positions in this league, because they've not been good enough in the biggest games. But yeah, I'd expect them to go to Huddersfield and probably produce a performance to the ilk that they did when Wagner first took over. And yeah, I think the biggest thing I can say here is this is a Norwich team that still looks vastly different to how they were looking in the latter stages of Dean Smith's tenure. This is a better side right now that I think will make the playoffs. There you go.
All right, big shout. A little news line from Norwich that came out this weekend. Angus Gunn, a former England under 21 international, has switched to Scotland after chatting with their boss, Steve Clark. And let's be honest, realizing that he's not going to get in the England squad. Well, according to Wikipedia, somebody not too far from this Zoom call did something very similar. Sam Parkin switched allegiances, right?
Did you?
No, I'm not sure England schoolboys quantifies as a switched allegiance.
Oh, it does. It does.
Allegiance.
I was a year below Ryan Giggs at England schoolboy level. He played for England schoolboys and then obviously he played for Wales. But I think it's because it's the schools.
Where you
it?
Go to school. Yeah, I did not go to school in Wrexham.
Nor in Forfar. Anyway, good luck, Angus. Elsewhere, Luton Town earned one of the weekend's most eye-catching results. They win at Bramall Lane on Saturday. On Wednesday night, they take on Bristol City at Kenilworth Road. Your old club, Sam, Luton, we've had Rob Edwards on the pod this season. I wonder how loudly he laughs at Watford in his private moments. They're fourth, 9 points better off than the Hornets. They're only 7 points off second place. We do a lot of tub thumping for Middlesbrough and their chances of going up automatically this season. Is there any chance Luton could gate crash that particular party?
I don't think so. If all the games were away from home, maybe. best team in the division in that regard, which is just kind of creeped up on me. Last four, best team in the division. I know Clarkie likes that 12-game barometer, doesn't he? But last four I'm going in with here, 10 points. No one had more than the Hatters. And I think it'll be tight, this one, against Bristol City. Four out of the last five at Kenilworth Road have finished 1-0. Three of those victories, and obviously the 1-0 reverse against Burnley, when they gave a really good account of themselves as well, it must be said. So, yeah, this will be a tight game, very clinical in the victory up at Bramall Lane at the weekend, scored with their only attempt on target. 15 now for previously scouted Carlton Morris, 15 goals and five assists. And, yeah, brilliant on the road and doing this all, you know, with some really important players missing. Really important players. Sonny Bradley, I think, was back on the bench, but Jordan Clark's been a revelation for Luton, really. He's signed a new contract recently after, you know, a stellar few years after joining from Aki. Doughty as well has played his way into, I think, Nathan Jones' plans just prior to him leaving and subsequently been a good player for Rob Edwards as well. So the back five, or the back three and the two wing-backs at the weekend, Lockyer, Osho, Bell, wing-backs Drama, Onyedimma. On the other side. I mean, that doesn't say to me a back five that's going to get you loads of clean sheets, but they are. Three clean sheets in four, like I just reeled off, not conceding any goals really, apart from two against Millwall, where one of them was a bit of a freak. So the performance is improving at home, defensively very, very good. Nakamba has added something in the middle of the pitch. I mean, they've got a nice cushion now as well, haven't they, over the chasing pack. So if they weren't to make the playoffs now, it'd be a real disappointment. But yeah, nothing but admiration and hope they can keep going.
Yeah, they've been brilliant, Luton, no doubt about that. I want to get your thoughts, Sam, on the double big man combo. It's such a rarity, isn't it? Normally we talk about big man, little man combo. You don't have that many strike partnerships these days, but it's normally a contrast in styles. And I know that they're not identikit. Adebayo and Carlton Morris, but they're two big old units together. Why is it working so well? Why don't more people do it?
I think it works, put me on a spot there, but they've got quite unique skill sets, I would say. They're pretty good at pulling wide. Morris does it left-hand side. He's very two-footed. Adebayo, as we saw at the weekend, pulled right. And I love that nutmeg to get the space on John Fleck, wasn't it? Amazing nutmeg. And then obviously combining for the goal. But yeah, I think it's the mobility probably more than anything. Rather than just being fixed up against centre-halves, they can move around, they can run beyond. Adebayo probably more so than Carlton Morris. But unselfish players as well, always looking for each other. My only real experience of it was with Tommy Mooney, and we got 40 goals between us in our one season together, maybe a few more. And I always said when the ball was coming in, as it does at Luton frequently, probably not so much now James Bree's not there, but you catch my drift, from wide, they'll put it into the box. If one of you doesn't get it, the other one will be covering the other area. And I just felt, as simplistic as it sounds, that's why me and Tommy Mooney's work so much. We had an unbelievable hunger to probably outscore each other to make the box. And we were clinical. And I think we're seeing that with those two. Yeah, I think Carter Morris, I think he cost a fair few quid. Maybe not in the larger scale of things, but for a club of Luton size, still, that's a very, very astute signing, I would say.
All right. Well, it's Luton versus Bristol City. Luton 5-6 for the win with Quinn Bett. The draw's 13-5. Bristol City 10-3 in that one. Big game at the Stadium of Light on Wednesday. It's Sunderland versus Sheffield United. Let's start with the away side here, Clarkie, because I'm intrigued by Sheffield United. This feels like a choking kind of season to me. I mean, their last five games all finished 1-0. They won 3, lost 2. That includes the cup match against Spurs. You sort of wonder if they could do without the FA Cup quarterfinal against Blackburn this weekend. But are you of the mind that they're going to grind this out and get over the line, or are you thinking that they are going to make a mess of it?
If they don't improve their mentality, Sheffield United, they'll blow it. That's my honest opinion. I think that they are a team that are at their best when they play front foot, aggressive, attacking football, using the full width of the pitch, playing combinations, moving opposition players around. They've stopped doing it. They're just playing safe football. You know, they're playing the easy passes. They're not stretching anybody. And as a consequence, they're not really creating any good chances in the game against Luton. It was only at the end where they just went a little bit panicky. They got balls into the box and hoped for the best. That combination play that got them to the top of the table has dried up big time. Have they lost their nerve? Maybe. But that doesn't mean they can't get it back. I think they just need a little bit of a reset, the Blades, and they're more than capable of going up top two, but they can't go up playing a negative brand of football. They've got to rediscover themselves.
Meanwhile, Sam, that was a big win for Sunderland against Norwich on Sunday.
Side by Roberts for Gilhart, and this is Barr. He's worked the shooting only, and he's done more than that. Abdullah Barr strikes for Sunderland. A treasured moment for him, his first goal for the club.
Means that they are 5 points off the playoffs, and they'd lost 3 in a row before then. So it really was important that they got back to winning ways. But I guess we'll see if their playoff ambitions are genuine over the following games, because they've got this one against Sheffield United, then Luton and Burnley. I mean, it's going to be tough to take, what, 4 or 5 points from that, which they need to bridge that gap?
Yeah, it's a hellish looking run of games on the back of, as you say, Matt, I think 3 winnable games, which is why there's been a bit of criticism for Tony Mowbray. And it kind of took me by surprise. I don't know why I found myself reading some Sunderland content last week, but I did. And I was like, wow, that's a bit harsh. They lost to Rotherham, Coventry and Stoke. Obviously, it was the manner of the Stoke defeat, probably, but he was getting a bit. Knives were out for him. So I think a real big result for him is probably, you know, testament to the job he's done since he's gone in, because we were all a little bit sceptical, and probably the injuries that they've suffered, that lack of physicality was really evident against Stoke last time out. So to rectify it, you know, in such incredible fashion, I felt, at Carrow Road was superb. They were so committed, so aggressive. Obviously, that midfield area needed kind of reinforced after the Dan Neil Pritchard experiment went horribly wrong for 45 minutes against Stoke. 09 playing left back, I think it was, left-sided centre-half, a bit of a hybrid role, but he was very, very good, very, very tenacious, and a brilliant goal from Barr with some big players missing, as we know, a brilliant goal, brilliant first goal for the club. So I thought they were better than Norwich in all departments, and to limit them to, what, a half Timu Pukki chance towards the end. I think that was the only opportunity that made the short 3-minute highlights real. Just is testament to what a great rear guard performance it was from the likes of 09, Ballard and Danny Batt in particular. Excellent. So brilliant win. And before Luton and another tough game against Burnley. We'll see what they're made of in this home game against the Blades.
Meanwhile, in League One, it's Burton Albion and Peterborough United at the Pirelli Stadium on Tuesday. Fair to say the moods are contrasting between the two sides after Albion beat Wickham and Posh got told who their daddy was by Cheltenham. That was a big win, Adrian, for Burton. They're 18th, 5 points from trouble. They got games in hand. And I like how we spoke about how Dino Marmaria basically appointed himself into the job. And it looks like he made a decent decision. They've won five of their last eight.
Yeah, I like what he's doing, Dino Mamria. He's definitely improved them. Over the last eight games, I'm not going for the 12-game sample here, so I'm going for the last eight. Burton are the fifth-best team in League One. They've done excellently. They've accrued 16 points in eight games, two a game. That's promotion form. Peterborough come into it with 10 points from those eight games. So in a way, Burton might be favourites for this game. And it's the sort of game that Peterborough might slip up in. Bad pitch. We saw that at the weekend. I mean, down one half where the dugouts are, it's absolutely shocking. And it'll be a test for Peterborough. Do they fancy it or not? I thought there were some great goals. Obviously, Powell's goal was great. Dale Taylor running through off to flick on. That's what they're about. So they'll really test Peterborough in the air. And they've defended poorly, haven't they, in the previous game against Cheltenham. They'll look for the flick-ons. Someone like Dale Taylor will sniff around looking for the second balls. It was a bit embarrassing how he knocked big Chris Farino over to score that goal. But they'll look to rough up Peterborough in this game and carry on this excellent run. I think Posh need to regroup mentally. I'm sure Ferguson will get them pumped up for this one because he wouldn't have been happy with what he saw from his team last time out. But yeah, won four of the last six at home, Burton. So I give them a shot at causing another upset here.
That is understatements, Adrian Clark there, saying that Darren Ferguson wouldn't have been happy with what he saw against Cheltenham. Let's hear what the posh gaffer had to say after that defeat.
I think you've seen today a prime example of players just wanting to do what they want, completely going off the game plan, turning up, I think, with a mentality that they're just going to win. They were warned yesterday. They were warned after the warm-up because that was rubbish. And after 10 minutes, quite honestly, I made a mistake, so I should have made about four subs. It was an awful day. But if you don't turn up with the correct mentality and you don't do the basics and the fundamentals and don't stick to the game plan, second half, we're getting it and just launching it on the centre-half's heads. It's not going to work. You've got players playing in wrong positions, just running around. Absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
Sam, you ever been criticised by a manager for the quality of your warm-up?
Oh, mate, you've teed me up. One of my pet hates.
Yeah.
Whenever I hear it, I'm on the WhatsApp to some of my mates. I don't buy into that. I could have an astonishingly bad... If anything, I heard Joe Cole talking about this the other day. If I whistle 9 out of my 10 shots in the warm-up into the rigging, I'm going to have a stinker. I don't want to use up my ability in the warm-up. I want to save it. Sometimes I'd feel fresh and like it was normally night games. I'd feel like quite, I don't know, your touch would be in and you'd smell that you were going to have a good game. But the quality of the keep ball, do me a favour.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. I didn't try a leg in warm-ups. Just did no interest. Zero interest. That's what they are. They're a warm-up. It's just get the legs moving a little bit, but not too much because you want to save them. You don't want to use up all your energy. I'm the same with Sam. He starts spanking them in the top corner in the shooting drills. You used up your quota, haven't you? So,
no. Towards the end, I was like, I was getting annoyed at the amount of running I was doing in the warm-ups. Yeah. I was thinking maybe because by this stage, I was obviously carrying my ankle woes somewhat. Through matches and through subsequent days. But yeah, I was thinking, I'm running too much here. I'm going to be leggy. Like, you know, especially I was playing in Devon and the sunstroke and all that in August.
It's a classic coaches get out of jail excuse. Mm. The warm-up. I knew they were rubbish. I knew we'd have a bad day because their attitude stunk in the warm-up. Honestly, so many teams have bad warm-ups and win 4-0. No one ever says anything about it then. So, yeah, it's poor. Poor from Fergie.
I heard of Michael Flynn. They're playing for their futures at the weekend as well, which I thought he'd gone a bit early with that one.
Love it. League Two, Northampton against Mansfield. They met in the playoff semi-finals last season. Mansfield won that one. How are you feeling about Northampton, Adrian? Because for ages they were hanging around in third place, seemingly not doing very well, and they've dropped out of the top three now. They're 4-3 points off the automatic promotion places. Only lost one of nine, but an awful lot of draws in there and not too many goals of late.
No, I went to the playoff semi-final, Northampton against Mansfield. Mansfield won it, and they deserve to win. Obviously, they blew it at Wembley. Northampton are going to struggle to get promoted this season unless they start scoring goals again. In 13 of their last 14 matches, the Cobblers have scored one goal or less. No wonder the winds have dried up. You're not going to win many games if you only score one. So, and against a team like Mansfield, who will always come on the front foot, trying to score goals, trying to get at you, you're not going to win the game with one very often against a team like Mansfield. So, queue up a 1-0 win. But you get my drift. They're very solid, and they've got two excellent wingers, haven't they, in Pinnock and Hoskins. But they need more goals.
What about Mansfield? They had the weekend off, Sam, because their game against Leighton Orient was postponed because it was very icy in that particular part of the world. Mansfield have won 5 of their last 7. They've only lost once, but that was a thrashing at home by Salford. They're pretty good away from home, aren't they, the Stags? Won their last 3, so they'll go here with confidence.
Yeah, I think I'd never seen Nigel Clough so measured after a spanking as I did after the Salford defeat. I think we covered it, didn't we? I think it was really realistic that they got beaten by a better side on the day and that they've been on a really good run. Last 8, 17 points. Northampton, 11 points. And I think Clarkie summed it up there for me. In the last 7 games, Northampton have scored 6 goals. Mansfield have scored 18. So they come into this in much better form, in much better goal-scoring form. Players, I'm really interested about whether they can continue in the same vein. Keeler Dunn, since he's come in, 6 games, 3 goals, 2 assists. Danny Johnson slowly being introduced back into the fold after all that Walsall. Will he stay? Will he come back? Nonsense. He notched off the bench in their last game against Wimbledon, so he's got the option to get old DJ out there with maybe Akins and Keeler Dunn, which would be a formidable kind of front three, I reckon. He loves, obviously, Akins. Got obviously so much history with him from Burton. So I think the safe money's on 1-1 still, probably because Northampton, as they so often are pretty good defensively, the 6th best defence currently. And I thought that was quite interesting. Haven't conceded more than 2 all season, Northampton Town, which shows you that despite their lack of a clinical edge, for a better phrase, they're a well-structured team, hard to break down, hard to beat. So I don't see there being too much between these sides again.
Well, that is pretty much reflected in the odds. 13-10 with QuinnBet on Northampton to win, 9-4 the draw, and 11-5 for an away victory. Those prices accurate at the time of recording. That's just about going to do it for us today. Tweet of the week, though, comes from Freddie Woodman, who'd like you to know that he bled for the cause. He says, Saturday afternoons with 3 points and a clean sheet, heart eyes emoji, smiling emoji, hashtag PNEFC. But Sam, in each of the 4 pictures that he's put up, we can clearly see the blood, I was going to say streaming, but that's generous, trickling from the cut just around his eye. And that's the point of the tweet, right? I bled for the cause.
Yeah. Not a fan of the old, the cut. The old the injury shot post match, to be honest. So and the wording as well. I mean, I got to be consistent, haven't I, Clarkie? If that's a 4-2 home defeat, my respect for him is no end. But no, not after a clean sheet and a comfortable home win and a cut to add. It's a poor tweet. 4 out of 10.
Jonathan Ashton replied, hero today, Freddie. Fantastic as always, and always have time for fans. A proper Preston player. You are the gentry.
That's a 3. Oh, yeah. It's a gentry, sorry.
Yeah, the gentry thing's confusing. There's not enough punctuation in it either. What do you think of this, Adrian? He is basically just saying, I'm a hero, because I played on anyway.
I'd have had a lot more respect for him if he'd have just put, I am a hero. With love, heart, smile.
Yeah, good win. You know, something like that. Make a joke of it.
Exactly. Look, that's content for you, Matt. That's why you're in the content game.
Adrian, tell us how people can follow us on our social channels, because the content is bloody good.
Bloody good, I tell you. Especially on Instagram and TikTok, where you can find us at What The EFL. It's not hard. The follower count is growing slowly but surely. Lots of video clips put up there. We'll try and expand it over time, but step by step we're getting there. So yeah, join the party and come and see us on social media.
And thank you to everybody who's left us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, by the way. We really appreciate that. If you have the facilities to do that on your preferred podcast platform of choice, we would really appreciate it. Or just tell somebody that we're here and they can listen too. Before we go, one last mention for the offer from our friends at QuinnBet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinnbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, we'll be back next week. Until then, my thanks, of course, to Adrian and Sam, and have a great week. We'll speak to you soon.